everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Jedi Way. It's been a bit. It's been a minute. We've been doing all these Andor reviews on the Outlaw Nation channel with Laura Kelly, and finally, we're getting around to do our regular show of The Jedi Way. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, joined, as I said, always by the co-host of Force Toast Pod and also the co-host here, Laura Kelly. How are you?
I am amazing. I'm very happy to be back and talking about more Star Wars, different Star Wars than Andor. Not better, not worse, yeah. Just different. Happy to be back in this realm of things. We get to talk about more animation now. It's a little bit lighter of a load coming to us, yeah, in terms of what Star Wars we're getting earlier in 2023. And I am very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's been a busy last few weeks, certainly the end of Andor, as you just mentioned here, but also we just had the Video Game Awards with a new trailer for Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which a lot of people are excited about. We've got a new trailer for Star Wars Bad Batch Season 2, which is dropping like literally weeks, like 2 or 3 weeks from now, and you and I will probably get the episodes a little bit earlier than that, so it's kind of crazy how we just finished one cycle, and here we go right into another one, Laura, and it's going to be over 2 months, 2.5 months, I think, the amount of episodes, so it's going to be a lot for us to jumping into, but you're right, a little more of a slowing down a little bit after the emotional journey that Andor was. It's going to be nice to take a little bit of a break here and jump into the fun stuff that is the Bad Batch.
Exactly, and then we get Star Wars Celebration. Yeah. So there's lots of good things coming to us soon. I mean, not to mention we just got Tales of the Jedi. I mean, we've been just inundated with content, so yeah, it's kind of nice to have just a couple weeks at least of a nice little break. But yes, very much looking forward to getting into the Bad Batch here soon. January 4th is coming up, yeah, very quickly. And then it just is nonstop, because then that starts to overlap with Mandalorian. It's just going to be a lot happening, yeah, I think, in the first half of the year, at least.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, not letting go of Star Wars here. And with Bob Iger coming back, who knows what new and interesting things we've got going on with Star Wars down the road as well, with new ways they're going to be expanding the brand and the franchise for us to enjoy as well going forward in the future here. And we're going to talk about it, but normally the show is like we grab one philosophical concept or one situation, jump into it, but today is more of a catch-up show. We got a lot of news that's going on, and we just kind of want to have a conversation about a lot of the stuff dealing with Andor, Mandalorian, Bad Batch, Jedi Survivor, so much to jump into as we go along here. So and even some Acolyte stuff, which I think is where we're starting, Laura, so let's kick it off there.
Exactly. So there's not a whole, I'm not sure where all of these photos originated, but they've just been blowing up my entire Twitter for the last 2-3 days. There's been some photos that have leaked from the set of, yeah, Star Wars The Acolyte, which is the Leslie Headland series that she's show running. And it's based at the end of the High Republic. It sounds like it's being set about 100 years before The Phantom Menace. And anybody who knows anything about me knows that I am obsessed and so head over heels in love with the High Republic. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the show in huge ways, but also not, because it means that's the end of the High Republic era. And so then I'll be sad. But for now, I'm very excited kind of getting to see, I mean, just the mere idea of getting to see Jedi in these gold robes that I've only seen in like concept art and comics. And like the idea of getting to see that in like real life and photo realistic like settings. I cannot wait. I'm obsessed, yeah, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to post the photos because some people have been upset about seeing the photos. I think Molly Damon had a really great tweet where she was like, my Twitter feed is inundated with these photos, but I don't think that's the way Leslie Headland wanted people to experience this for the first time. So for those of you who feel that way, I'm not posting the photos here as we talk about it. But the photos did have Lee Jung-jae, Daphne Keene, Dean Charles Chapman, and a few other characters. And I got to say, from looking at the photos, because I don't have a hang up about looking at these photos, it's really cool to see the designs and the look. I mean, the Wookiee look as well, and seeing the hairstyles and the robes and the just overall costume design. You know, we were glowing about Mon Mothma's costume designs in Andor. So seeing even more of that attention to detail, the weaponry, all that's being used here throughout. And there's a lot of these pictures, the designs on the different species, on their faces, the vehicles, little glimpse of the vehicles we got. All of it looks really cool. So the vibe overall, even though it may not have been the way that Leslie Headland wanted these photos to come out, the overall vibe is pretty awesome and looks like they are really invested in making this work and really invested in putting their best foot forward with this series, just from the looks and the design and the attention to detail that I see in these photos.
Agreed. And we can see in a lot of these pictures, and you know, again, I don't want to spoil too much of what we're seeing and what's happening, but it looks like a lot of it, we're getting a lot of outside sets. So it's looked like maybe we're taking a little bit of a page out of the Andor book and sticking with some more of the natural lighting, sticking more with the outdoors. We have seen some other photos, I think, that actually were meant to be like press release photos that came out that they were on a set, clearly. But yeah. I'm kind of hoping that they're taking a little bit, maybe a little bit more turn in that direction, as opposed to being in the volume so much, just like The Mandalorian was.
Yeah. Do you sense that you're getting some of the same beats? Because some of the speculation in the articles that have covered these photos are, you know, there's Jedi, there's a Padawan and a Master, and there's a Wookiee now in these photos with hanging out with Dean Charles Chapman. So is that a kind of tracing the Han Solo Chewbacca thing? Like, do you sense that we're getting enough? We're sense we're getting some things that are familiar yet in new settings in their approaches. Obviously, it's not Solo and Chewbacca; it's different characters, but. Do you sense that maybe they feel like, okay, let's give them just a little bit of what they're used to, and then we'll kind of expand out and create our own world as we go along?
You know, I haven't given a whole lot of thought, but I think it would be sort of interesting to bring back, I think, some of the more classic elements of Star Wars. You know, a lot of people talked about how in Andor we didn't have a lot of aliens on screen, and obviously The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, we've had lots of aliens shown in live action in that sort of set of Star Wars stuff that we've been getting. This, I kind of put this in like a separate category because it's not part of like the Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni umbrella of things. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're still involved in some extent, but it's different time period overall. Right. I'll be very curious to see how it plays out and how the look and feel is a little bit different. Leslie Headland has talked a lot about how, you know, it sounds like the prequels were a big thing for her too. And maybe just kind of based on her age, you know, I feel like I've heard a lot about her talking about going to like the premiere of like the Phantom Menace and how all of the prequels movies sort of shaped, you know, her understanding of Star Wars, I think, in a way. So I'll be curious to see like what is classic elements of like the original trilogy and in the prequel trilogy is she going to bring into this show and how it's going to be different than what we're used to.
No, I think the point you make too, that's I think we should stress again, is how this looks like a lot of outside sets, at least from the picture, and I kind of like that vibe. You know, we've talked about the volume so much in previous Star Wars series or movies. So seeing it not necessarily be something that they're relying on for everything. It's nice to see that there are other projects, big projects that they're working on where they're not going to necessarily default to the volume. So that makes me happy, because as much as J.J. Abrams talked about moving away from the CGI stuff, focusing more on practical effects, I think the volume was becoming a little bit of a crutch. So to see them moving away from it, I think is exciting. And I know there are people who love Kenobi, but I think Kenobi would have really been a much more interesting show if we'd had a bit less of that and a little more of being out in the, you know, we did get enough in the, but I would have liked a little bit more, you know what I'm saying? Like Andor had, and I think that would have been a lot more fun to see in the show. And so to see the Acolyte hopefully is doing more of the practical stuff, I think excites me to getting into the drama of what this show is supposed to be about and supposed to show. So yeah, I like the vibe overall for sure. Anything stood out to you from the costume designs, or as a High Republic person, anything that stood out to you from the designs that felt familiar to you, or that you were like excited to see that you had maybe pictured in your mind when you were reading the books or anything like that?
You know, I don't know how much I had given thought to a Wookiee wearing Jedi robes. There's some imagery we have of like the character Buriaga from phase one of the High Republic. And, you know, when they talk about wearing their sort of white dress robes, but getting to sort of see that on the set, it had a funnier look to me than I thought it would be. it was just great and silly in a way that Star Wars is great and silly. But I think one of the more interesting things that people have been sort of observing in these set photos that have leaked is that there's not as much detail on the Jedi robes as there is in the High Republic. And the ones that we've seen in the High Republic tend to be white with more of like the gold trim and the gold design here and there. These are much more solid gold from what we've seen, and there's not a lot of extra like intricate sort of detail and design on them. It's a pretty solid colored thing. So I don't know, it'll kind of be interesting. I mean, obviously costumes, you know, in the universe would have evolved from the time of phase one of the High Republic to where we are now, where it's ending, and I understand that. But it would have been if we even just get like a little glimpse of some Jedi wearing those formal white robes that I've only ever seen in comics and in concept art, like my mind will explode.
Okay, yeah, and I think that's absolutely in play at some point for sure. It feels like from
hopefully
what you're hearing, and this is going to be set 100 years before the Phantom Menace. So when you look at the Jedi robes that Dean is wearing, they're, you know, they're not that different from what you saw Anakin wearing. And so in my mind, I'm like, that makes sense. Cause look, we're still wearing Levi's jeans and that's probably 100 years old. So why wouldn't some of this fashion stuff still be around from that time? Look, I mean, what's old is new again all the time. People wearing fighter jackets now, bomber jackets, all that stuff. So, you know, what's old is new always. So the robe stuff, although it may seem similar, and it almost looks like he's got a little bit of a rat tail like Anakin. So it could be something that's still carrying over. And like I said, hitting some familiar beats. And like you mentioned earlier, how Leslie was influenced by the prequel trilogy, that could also have something to do with the design of Dean Charles Chapman's overall look, maybe. Just guessing.
Exactly. Very excited for this. I mean, I'm hoping that we don't get too many more leaked photos from this set. I really would like to see what they want to show us, when they want to show it, when it's been touched up, when it's got their sort of final blessing, and we have a better idea of what the actual show will look like. So hopefully this doesn't continue to be a thing. Cause I mean, like I said, this was just my whole timeline was this for like 2 days. So if anybody who was wanting to avoid spoilers for the Acolyte was on Twitter, I can't imagine that they were successful in that, because it was everywhere. Yeah. So fingers crossed that it tends to stay a little bit more, I think, under the radar, at least until they finish filming.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you 100%. Let's move on to this Mandalorian story. This was something I posted on our rundown here just a few minutes before we started the show, because I want to talk about this as it was breaking. But Giancarlo Esposito, was at a recent event and was speaking about Mandalorian season 3, was talking to Collider as well, and this is the quote from him. He said, "I just think that the show gets more expanded, more visually profound with each season, and I think it's the vision of Favreau and Filoni that begins that expansion, but it's also all the artisans that just try to collaborate with them. I was blown away by that sizzle reel. All of a sudden the world just came at you in a much more intense and it's always been gratifying, but in a way that allowed you to know that feeling you have of dread or doom over excitement personified." Goes on to say that he loves the mythology, love the fact you're able to see with each episode this season, you're really turning on a new movie each episode. Visually, it's a sight and sound extravaganza, but I think when you watch it, you have the space to feel the emotion and connection between the characters. You have the space to feel the largeness of the universe, of this world building. God, I wish I could be that warrior, that hero, that heroine, and would see that weakness and to the power of the villainous that want for themselves and not for the whole. And he talks about, we stand up, he's talking about standing up and fighting and all these kinds of things that he does. And so the Mandalorian exemplifies all of that in this season, will be off the chain, as the kids say there, Laura. So a nice thing to put out there. Although I don't know if anyone's been using that term for quite some time, but interesting stuff for us to put out there to talk about the mythology of it all, but also giving love to the artisans and the craft makers there involved in the production team and what they're creating here. And this is supposedly the most expensive season of The Mandalorian. So what does that tell you about what to anticipate here in season 3? And what do Giancarlo Esposito's comments make you think we're going to be getting here in season 3?
Well, first of all, anybody who's ever been anywhere where he is speaking knows how long-winded he is. The man, if he ever decides to like not be an actor, like he definitely has a future in like motivational speaking. The way that he's so freaking great to see live in any sort of concept, because he just is, he's just great. But I think the thing that people don't necessarily like, I think I've seen a lot of complaints about this, is that when it comes to like merchandising, there is a lot of Baby Yoda merchandise out there. You can't look anywhere, I feel like, without seeing it. And that's, you know, that's great. I love Baby Yoda. I have lots of Baby Yoda merchandise myself. But I know that some people are just like, hey, can we get like literally anything else? Which is a fair request. But you can't deny that that is what sells. And that is what's probably driving a lot of this funding that's going back into making The Mandalorian. This is the thing that reignited, I feel like, this great section of the Star Wars fandom that maybe had been whether or not you were into the sequels, maybe you liked it, maybe you didn't, but like this was the thing that really brought, I think, a lot of people back into Star Wars and sort of united the fandom in a big way. And so the fact that they are at least acknowledging that and putting the money into the show, I'm excited by this. So I don't have any issue with it. I understand though the frustration that sometimes comes along with it, that like, why does it sort of seem like Kenobi is such a small scope and it feels claustrophobic because it's inside. It's like, sometimes I wonder if they're really allocating all of those funds that are coming in from this Baby Yoda merchandise adequately to some of the other shows. It does seem like a lot of it goes to The Mandalorian, but we'll see how that plays out. What are your thoughts on this? Yep.
I take a, you know, first of all, however money they want to spend is however money they want to spend. I'm cool with that. I think The Mandalorian deserves it because it's been kind of this crown jewel on the TV side of things for Star Wars. So why not spend the extra money to expand the world out a little bit more, to play with special effects, to bring in stuff that's going to be fun to see in The Mandalorian. And look, I mean, Andor kind of threw the gauntlet down in a certain way for an approach to a series. So let's see how The Mandalorian season 3 kind of carries that baton, and then Ahsoka after that, you know. So there's going to be a great connective tissue, I think, throughout, in terms of the approach and the amount of money and the acolyte, which we just spoke about as well. So I'm cool with that. I like this comment. I pull out this though, that every episode is going to be a movie. So in my mind, what does that mean? Are these episodes going to be longer than episodes that we've seen before? Is this the British approach to things? For those of us that watch British shows, we know sometimes there are seasons of shows and each episode is an hour and a half. And so it's weird. It's like its old self-contained movie, but yet it's considered a season of television. So are they going a little longer with some of these? Are they self-contained in terms of movies, in terms of the approach of a movie? Or is it kind of a sequel approach? Is every installment a sequel to that first episode? I don't know. So there's a lot of questions that I have in my mind about how the things that he said. I think he said all the great things about Star Wars and what it symbolizes and all the work being done behind the scenes and him talking about expanding the universe. Just that little bit is what I pull out going, what does that mean that every episode is a movie? You know, you don't say that about 30-minute episodes or 40-minute episodes. So I wonder if that means these episodes might be a little bit longer than we've gotten in the past, which could be interesting.
That is my hope. That's my hope, that they're longer. I'm going to keep my expectations low because I feel like every year I'm like, I want longer episodes of The Mandalorian. And then every year we're like, there's at least a couple episodes that are like right under that 30, right around that 30-minute mark. Yeah, and I'm like,
exactly.
Why? Make it longer. So we'll see. But yeah, that would be nice if that's part of it, that we get these longer run times for some of these episodes and it just...
Yeah.
Expands everything even more than it's already been expanded. This is such a great era in Star Wars. You know, we've got that massive gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, where there's just not a ton of content, or at least there wasn't until now. So they've got lots of places they can go, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Agreed. Agreed.
We'll be right back with The Jedi Way right after this.
All right, well, let's move on to some of our more recent topics here. What are we moving on to next here, Laura?
Let's talk about The Bad Batch. We got that trailer, and that was, I guess, kind of a surprise. I think maybe we got a little bit of heads up that this was coming, but the fact that we have gotten a second trailer at all, it's like, I mean, I went back and watched the first trailer that came out, I think, about 6 months ago, and it was like streaming this fall. And I'm like, yeah, remember that? Remember when we were going to be streaming this fall? Now it's January 4th. Close enough. Yeah. They got close.
I'm looking at it and I like the trailer. I thought the trailer was really cool. I was surprised that it's coming out January 4th. I don't know, maybe I'd forgotten or all this. Listen, the end of the year is just crazy for us who are in critics organizations, because we're just watching movies and TV shows just constantly because we've got to vote for this stuff. So sometimes facts slip out. So I guess I hadn't remembered that it was coming out on January 4th. So thought that was a nice little surprise. And then the trailer itself, I thought was really cool. I mean, the opening with the crab stuff, where are they? What planet is that on? The expansion of Crosshair with Commander Cody. What are we doing there? What is this? Cody doesn't seem like he's chosen a side yet. So where is he going? Even though he's with Crosshair, what is that going to lead to? Crosshair, very clearly, no question about where he's at. I don't know. I know Star Wars loves redemption arcs, but I don't know if necessarily there's a redemption arc here for Crosshair, and maybe that's a good thing. And then looking at all the interactions with them, with the Bad Batch, and then seeing the new character coming in that Wanda Sykes is voicing interest, kind of taken over, it feels like, from Sid maybe a little bit, or maybe that's just a one-off episode. But I like Wanda Sykes, so having Wanda Sykes and Rhea Perlman kind of giving the guys some crap as they're sending them out on missions, kind of interesting. An older Omega as well, seeing her do much more in the trailer than we saw in that teaser trailer. So, okay, what does that mean? Where is that leading to? And then the questions about, look, Echo being like, we can't stay on the sidelines anymore. We got to make a choice here. And then, of course, Rex showing up at the end, the Wookiee Jedi who survived the Clone Wars, like having him be a part of this thing. So a lot of teasing of probably some one-off episodes, but overall, I like the vibe. And this is my crew. So I'm very excited to be getting it back and getting to see a little bit more of what we're going to be seeing in this season of Bad Batch.
Exactly. This like opening scene that we sort of see in, is with the crabs and on this tropical planet. Like we got an extended, you know, I think it was like a 5-ish minute version of this action sequence that we got to preview at Star Wars Celebration. And even in here, I'm just going off memory now, but it seems like a little bit, I would think that they probably went in and maybe like optimized it, cleaned it up a little bit, maybe even made it even more explosive than probably whatever we saw at Celebration, which was very fun and very exciting because this was our first preview, I think, of seeing Omega in action. She's older. Yeah. She's a lot more competent in what she's been in, you know, what we were seeing, especially with that sort of bow and arrow thing that she's using.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. I know the information's been out there how much time has passed. I think it's 2 years maybe since the last season. And I think that's very clear just in Omega. We also have like some sort of tweaks to the clone armor that the Bad Batch are wearing. Still not like actual clone armor for Omega. I still feel like she's a little bit unprotected in terms of what she's what she's wearing. Maybe we'll get there eventually. That's still my hope, is that she'll get more get more armor. But I think there's going to be a lot of tension, I think, between like Hunter and Echo. We see a little bit of them having a push and pull of Echo wanting to go out into the galaxy and help more people, help the galaxy at large, and Hunter being a little bit more micro-focused. And I also think that eventually we might get a little bit of, and we see a little bit in this trailer, this sort of guilt coming off of Omega, knowing that she's put these people that she loves in constant danger. They're already in danger without her.
Right.
But the fact that she is bringing even more of that on them just by being present, I think is going to start to wear on her a little bit. But I'll be curious to see if that really plays out to an extent in this season. That feels like something that maybe we'd get more of when she gets a little bit older, but we're already starting to see some of that come through, and it's really interesting for her character development, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, because you look at her as a clone, but then of course she's a fast developing clone, so what are the emotions that she's going through? We got the young girl with the uncles slash father figures vibe throughout the first season, so is this a teenager situation where she's feeling all the emotions of everything that's happening, taking on more than she needs to take on because she's still calibrating her emotions about it all? Is there going to be some of that involved with also her expanding her role as kind of a co-leader, which was kind of hinted at in the first season of this crew? Are we going to get that as well? So it certainly looks like it's going to be a wealth of storylines, emotional storylines, personal storylines going on with these characters that we're going to have some fun exploring overall. But I mean, Laura, D. Bradley Baker is doing it's like 75 clones in this damn thing. This is a lot of work for a voiceover artist, don't you think? I mean, Michelle just got one clone to worry about. He's got all these other clones to worry about.
Yeah, he's definitely putting in the work on this series. And I'm like, I had kind of forgotten that like Cody was going to be back too. And now we've got Rex making an appearance in this trailer too. I mean, it must be a lot. It seems like it has to be a lot. Like, I hope he's taking care of himself and making sure that he's drinking a lot of water. Like, is anybody looking out for D. Bradley Baker? I just need to make sure so we can keep all of this going, because this show is good and he is carrying a lot of it.
I'm sure the booth director is making sure he's okay. What about Palpatine's appearance in this? What do you take away? Because the initial comments or press releases or conversations about this show is saying that this second season Palpatine would be more of a presence, and do we see Dooku's palace? Like, what are your thoughts on how much of the Empire vibe is going to come into this season versus the first season, which was them kind of getting away and then dealing with Crosshair, but we didn't really see the Emperor that much or the feelings of the Empire that much in the first season. Of course, we saw them taking passes. We saw the ascension of the Empire into power in little moments in throughout the episodes. But this feels like they're going to focus on the Empire a little bit more in this second season.
Yeah, I'm going to read into it a little bit as I did the first season, or at least now having seen the first season, and that I think it's a little bit of a tease. I don't think we're going to get a ton of Palpatine in this. I mean, he's used effectively in this trailer. He was used very effectively in the first season. And in those trailers, we got little, you know, snippets of him, I think. And we got his Order 66 order in animation, which is very cool to see, and getting to see the different, you know, points of view as it played out. I think that it'll be fun to get to see the Senate. I think that's the thing I'm more excited about. We got appearances of Bail in this too. Yeah, so I'm more excited to see that than like the Empire. I have a feeling we're going to be digging a lot more into like these, like the actual stormtroopers playing a bigger role in the all of the sort of clones at large in the galaxy, observing that and wondering what's going to come next for them. And obviously, you know, the Empire sort of lingers over all of it because I'm imagining that they're still after Omega. I mean, we left off in season one with, I think, Nala Se heading into some cloning facility on some planet. And where are we going to pick up with that story and the efforts of the Emperor basically wanting to, you know, have his contingency plan in place and clone himself? And are we going to start getting that story, I think, in a bigger way in this season? I'll be curious to see that. But I think with the Empire, I think when they're using the Emperor specifically, a lot of times I just kind of interpret that as like they're just kind of teasing stuff, like wanting to bring people into this show. Maybe that's me being a cynic, but that's where I'm coming from with that.
Do you think there'll be any surprise characters popping up in the second season that are legacy characters? Like, do we see Leia? Do we see Han? Do we see Luke? Do we see any of that? Or do you think they're just going to stay with kind of like, for lack of a better term, the Outer Rim characters like Bail Organa and, you know, other things? And of course, within the world of the clones with Rex and Cody and what do you think they'll just kind of stay on the Outer Rims of these characters? Or do you think they'll bring in some of these main characters from maybe a one-off or whatever?
You know, I would like to see them do that because I think, you know, they brought in Cham and they brought in Harrison Dula last season. Right. And that was kind of a surprise.
Right.
And I thought it was done very effectively. They didn't overdo it bringing in these characters. And so I think they've struck a really good balance with that. I wouldn't be surprised to see some more of those legacy characters. I think with the appearance of Bail and the appearance of Rex, some people are sort of naturally assuming that Ahsoka might make an appearance. Sure. I'll be curious to see if that actually happens. I'm kind of thinking no. I think that might distract and take too much away from our central storyline. But again, you know, the fact that they went to the Twi'lek planet and helped with that, their whole storyline and story arc that was happening with those two or three episodes that featured the Syndullas, again, it was done very effectively. So they've clearly learned how to strike a good balance. And I would think they do the same with Ahsoka too. I also think there's going to continue to be a push to have Ahsoka on screen more and more so that it will draw more people ultimately to the live action series. But we'll see if she actually ends up making an appearance here. What do you think? Who do you want to see?
Yeah, I mean, of course I would love to see Ahsoka back again. And look, the Tales of the Jedi really gave us a little bit more with her, a little bit more with Dooku. So do we start to see these characters start to pop up in all these different kind of projects? Do we see them showing up? And I don't know. I have a lot of questions because, you know, I don't understand why you would spend a lot of time with that. And you just put in here, do we see Dooku's palace? So like, is there a possibility of that? Like, so there's a lot that goes through my head overall about how they're going to play the energy of Dooku. And if we're going to see Ahsoka in this, I'm very, very curious. In terms of legacy, I kind of think it should stand on its own. Maybe a Leia episode, maybe that's possible, or I don't know if you do a Luke, but maybe a Kenobi thing. I don't know. It's ways you can play with it for sure. But I like that it's in its own insulated thing, you know, kind of like with Andor, only occasionally touching upon stuff that's outside their world. But as the season goes along, it all depends on how the course of the season goes. If the course of the season is them getting closer and closer to joining the rebellion full time, then I don't see how we don't see some of these characters pop up in certain ways to be a part of this. So it would surprise me if they didn't show up, you know? I mean, where are we at in the timeline? Is Jyn Erso a possibility? Is Cassian a possibility? I mean, is Ackbar a possibility? I'm just throwing out like ideas in my head. Like these are, if they're getting close to the rebellion, how is that not possible that that could be there or even Saw again? I mean, that'd be fun. These are the things that I have in my head, because the closer you get to the rebellion, you're naturally going to have to come in contact with these people, Mon Mothma, who are part of the rebellion at its beginning, you know?
Exactly. And we haven't gotten a ton of, you know, Force user stuff, I don't think, at least in this show. Yeah. And we didn't get a ton of it in Andor. We obviously get a lot of it in The Mandalorian, but it would be nice to maybe bring some element of that into this, which is maybe why they brought in Gungi, the young Wookiee Padawan that...
Yeah.
Yay, excited to see that he survived Order 66. And we saw him in the first trailer, I think, for this show. But, you know, the fact that we get to see him in a little bit more action in this trailer, I'm very excited for that. I mean, that was, and that's maybe another reason why some people are suspecting Ahsoka, because Gungi, I think, was in that episode where, you know, Ahsoka and Yoda take the young Padawan, or take the younglings to Ilum to find their Kyber crystals. And that was a whole, you know, story arc in the Clone Wars with her and this Wookiee Jedi. So we'll see. Maybe she does make an appearance, or maybe we get any kind of other Force users thrown into this story at some point. That's one of those things that I would maybe be curious to see them add a little bit more of that element in this show.
Sounds good. We should hit on the titles here for these episodes, Laura. Is there something you want to speculate on these titles here? Let's take a look at them real quick. Shout out to Jennifer Corbett, who tweeted this. List of episodes, air dates here. Spoils of War and Ruins of War. Of course, January 4th, going to have a 2-episode premiere, just like they did last time. Then you've got The Solitary Clone, Faster, Entombed, Tribe, The Clone Conspiracy. Interesting. And Truth and Consequences on the same day. The Crossing, Retrieval, Metamorphosis, The Outpost, Pabu, Tipping Point, and then we wrap up with The Summit and Plan 99. Laura Kelly, thoughts on these titles for these episodes? What do you speculate we'll be getting there?
Well, I think with Clone Conspiracy and Truth and Consequences, when I think of that in the trailer that we just saw, I'm thinking that's maybe going to be a little bit more Cody content, maybe some of him clashing a little bit more strongly with Crosshair.
Yeah.
Pabu is a episode, it looks like March 15th. Like, is that the name of a planet? Is it a person? I probably should have looked that up ahead of time, but that's an unfamiliar word to me.
Yeah.
Metamorphosis is going to be an interesting one, maybe, because we saw these sort of weird, like, droids and beasts. We saw the Zillow Beast at one point in a previous trailer. So I'm like, is there maybe something coming with that? We saw, like, there was cloning involved with the Zillow Beast as well, and that's ultimately where he ended up. But it'll be really curious to see how all of that sort of plays into that. What's standing out to you in this list?
As I look at Pabo and I look here at the Star Wars wiki, or the fandom wiki for Star Wars, it's an R2 series astromech droid produced by Industrial Automaton and used by the crew of the YT-2400 light freighter known as the Fire Ferret. So BT or R2P4BU is basically the call sign for that. So another astromech droid. So interesting on so many levels what that might be. I like these titles. These titles are very, very curious to me. I mean, the Solitary Clone feels to me like maybe Omega, what we saw, the hint of that in the trailer of her not wanting to make them pay for the stuff that, you know, how they've already been paying by protecting her. Maybe she wants to go off on her own and kind of like separate and see if maybe she can get away from them so they don't have any kind of problems protecting her. And maybe she explores that on her own. And then she realized by the end that, like, it is important to stay part of this family, stay part of this crew. I don't know. Entombed is an interesting title for sure. I mean, the what that kind of conjures up in your mind. The Clone Conspiracy, I really, for whatever reason, I really am excited by that title for sure. The Crossing, Metamorphosis. What is the Outpost? Where are we going out to as an outpost? Where is that leading us to over there? And of course, you could just throw in those last three episodes, Tipping Point, The Summit, and Plan 99. Tipping Point, The Summit, Plan 99. So all of that is leading me to a lot of speculation in my mind of what, I mean, we know what Order 66 is. What is Plan 99? We know they're Clone Force 99. What is the plan? Is the Plan 99 saying, okay, now we're fully committed. How do we use them? What's the plan for Clone Force 99 as we use them going forward in the rebellion? So those are things that kind of pop out from the title. And of course, I could 100% be wrong about everything, but those are the things that are going in my mind as I look at these titles. Yeah.
Exactly. And we've got the March 29th will be the final two episodes of this season. And then, of course, we go right into Star Wars Celebration. So whatever happens, we will all still be reeling from it as Star Wars Celebration. Be interesting to see if they sort of set up any kind of hint of what's to come in season three of this show, which I assume we're going to get at some point.
Yeah.
And then if we get actually anything at Celebration, it'd probably be too early, I would think, to get anything. But any kind of tease would be helpful. And if we're going to get another time jump, I mean, these are all the questions that are already on my mind, and we haven't even started watching season two yet. So tell me, Star Wars. I need to know.
Definitely.
We'll be right back with The Jedi Way right after this.
Well, something we got to know about this week here, Laura, the Video Game Awards happened, which was absolute mania. Al Pacino was at the Video Game Awards. I mean, I would have never put that together. If you give me a million guesses, I would have never landed on Al Pacino being at the Video Game Awards. They dropped a bunch of trailers at this Video Game Awards. We got stuff for Cyberpunk 2077 with Idris Elba coming in. We got a new clip from the new Mario Brothers movie that's coming. We got Kevin Conroy being announced here to come back as the voice of Batman. Maybe the last time we'll hear him as the voice of Batman. I don't know, you know, the animation and video games, sometimes you can record something years ago and it kind of shows up again in the project when it's finally complete. We got a bunch of trailers for a bunch of video games that I've never heard of, but we did get a trailer also for Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which is, of course, picking up after Fallen Order. And this is set 5 years after Fallen Order. That's what they said. They also announced that it is coming out on March 17th. So right in the midst of the Bad Batch, the tail end of the Bad Batch season two, we will get the game for Star Wars Jedi Survivor. You can pre-order it now for $90 if you want to get it for yourself. It will be on PS5, the Xbox Series XS, and Windows PC. So you tell me, Laura, you know, we had a little bit of a teaser a few weeks ago, and then now this one. So what do you take away from this trailer and that shot of that hilt there at the end of that Jedi saber, which we had seen in Rebels, which thanks to all the people who schooled me on that, that I'd forgotten about. So what did you think about this entire trailer, what we got here in terms of the dialogue, the setting, the scenes, and some of the characters coming back?
Well, there's a couple things that I'm excited to see in when it comes to this video game, and most of them are BD1. Little droid is just so precious, and I can't wait to see more of what happens to her story. We obviously have a much older, much more mature Cal Kestis. I mean, I think they had said that this is set a couple of years in the future from where we left off in Fallen Order.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately I haven't played. I'm not a gamer, so I'm I'm interested in sort of the overall story of what's happening, but I'm not going to go out and buy a PS5 just so I can play this game, sadly. I probably wouldn't even take the time to rent one. I would probably watch if somebody had it and they would play, I would watch that. So that's on my list still, is to go watch all the cutscenes from Fallen Order so I can be in on this story.
Right.
But I just am really excited about the idea of getting yet another Jedi that survived Order 66 and seeing how their story evolves. This is just a really, really interesting component of the Star Wars timeline to me. So I wish I was a gamer so I could enjoy this more.
Yeah.
But fortunately, we're getting a Star Wars Jedi novel, so I'll get my own version of Cal Kestis here eventually. But I don't have a whole lot of input on the trailer, to be honest. What stood out to you? What are you most excited for in terms of the elements that may be carried over from Fallen Order in any of the new ones?
Well, I think, you know, because I only played half of Fallen Order, so I didn't finish the game, but I loved playing it. Oh my god, it was so much fun to play. But I will say this: to me, I like that we've got an older Cal Kestis. It's been a while. You know, he's changed his look. He's kind of filled out as a dude. He's got the hair. There's more confidence to him. It feels like when we saw Luke in Jedi, after we had seen him at the end of Empire Strikes Back, seeing him come out in Jedi with the all black look and being so confident and going toe-to-toe with Jabba verbally, and then, of course, that whole barge escape scene. So the confidence of Luke in that whole movie is incredible to witness, and I feel like we're on that path with Cal Kestis in this game, and some of the emotions in this game, emotional scenes that you see in this game with him, I like, and I'm seeing that, and the weapons have changed, so that's kind of interesting. So that'd be new things to explore, because, of course, it's a video game. You've got to give fans more stuff to explore, more weapons to play with and whatever. So all of that, and some of the scenes here, some of the scenarios, the back to tank opening, all of that kind of is a nice reference to Star Wars stuff we've seen before, but in a new approach. And this idea of you know, when that back to tank kind of dissipates and you see who it is, and the idea that, okay, I've got to find this guy, I've got to get my revenge. So now we've got that playing through this thing, and they're talking openly about Order 66. And so what is that all about? How does it play? Because clearly Order 66 didn't take out all the Jedis. We're seeing how many Jedi survived Order 66 to kind of sit around and wait for their moment to come back into this whole equation. So yeah, all of that looks pretty cool to me. And I like that we're going to get more of that being a part of this here in the game, and it's going to make it more interesting to explore for sure.
Yeah, it looks like we're bringing some. There was one character also that showed up in gold robes, and like the High Republic is just popping up everywhere in every direction, and I'm here for that. But yeah, very curious to see how this storyline plays out, because it's interesting enough that I'm going to have to go watch all the cutscenes of this particular game just so that I can get every piece of information that I need from this part of the storyline. Because you're right, it's like there are kind of a lot of Jedi we're finding out that survived Order 66, and I have yet to get sick of it, so they can just keep going with it.
That's fair. what do you think about the pot? And I know you haven't played the game, and maybe this is better when you watch the cutscenes, but there's a lot of rumors that they might take Cal and move him into live action. Would that be something that you might be interested in seeing, given the limited exposure you've had to the game and to this character overall? Would you be down with that? Especially because the droid, I imagine, would come with him, right? BD-1. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'll be more excited about it, I think, after I've read this Battle Scars novel that comes out in March. I think right now it's one of those, I will be very happy for all the people who are happy, because I mean, getting to see any character from any medium that isn't on screen get to make the leap to on, like, that's amazing. Yeah. And I would love to actually see just the explosion of happiness that happens online right after something like that premieres. But
yeah,
I think I will be more excited about it personally once I have a little bit more insight into who Cal Kestis really is, because at this point I have a very sort of 10,000 foot view of anything about his story, and I'm looking forward to diving into this novel so I can be sort of in on the joke too,
right?
You know, so I'll be more excited then. For right now, I'm just like, yeah, great. Are you, I mean, obviously if you've played the game, I imagine seeing Cameron Monaghan make that leap to on screen in Star Wars would probably be very exciting. Yeah,
I wonder if it would be him. You know, they didn't go with Ashley Eckstein, so I wonder if it would be him to do it. It would be interesting what the decision would be, depending on when they do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, what, because he could get older by the time they decide to do it. And so would they recast? Would they look at someone else? I don't know. It's a good question. What did you think about the, how can I say this correctly? The Kylo Ren hilt in the Jedi form. What did you think of seeing that at the end of the trailer? Any reactions to that? Cause we'd seen that in Rebels. So any reaction to that,
at the end? I like the cross guard saber. I was not like in with the Star Wars fandom when that sort of lightsaber hilt in the explosion of the red and how it sort of vibrates a little bit in a strange way. I mean, like, when people had such a weirdly negative reaction to that in the Force Awakens trailer, I just was not part of any of that conversation. Okay. I don't understand why that was so weird and upsetting and a negative thing for some people, because I think it's so cool. And like, I mean, and since then, yes, we've seen this crossguard saber style in Star Wars Rebels, which was in a scene that was basically a battle that had happened, like, I think hundreds of years ago or something.
Right.
So sort of establishing that these things have been around for a while, or this style has been around for a while. And then that's Stellan Geos' style of saber in the High Republic. So it's something that I'm like,
there we go,
I'm kind of just used to seeing now. It's still cool to get to see it every now and then, but I guess maybe the conversation has evolved a little bit where people aren't quite as unhappy to see that. I just don't understand why they were in the first place. I mean, what were your thoughts when we first were introduced to the concept of a crossguard saber, and what are they now?
I initially thought it was badass, you know, and then everyone started coming up, well, you'd cut off your fingers, you'd cut off your hands. And I'm like, yeah, but people wield all kinds of crazy things they could cut their hands off with, you know, in battle. So what's the difference here? And it looks pretty badass, which half of the battle is intimidating someone on the other sides, or a whole team, or an army rather, on the other side. So it's never really been an issue for me. And when it flared up here in this trailer, I was like, hell yeah, this looks awesome. Let's see what this is. And I didn't know that the High Republic, I haven't read any. So the fact that the High Republic stuff is connected to it makes me wonder now, what is that? Like, is there a legacy to that particular lightsaber that he lights up there at the end? So now I have questions even more so about that being a part of this video game. So that's exciting too, to see how much they're adding to the canon or the mythology of Star Wars with that particular lightsaber. So I have no problem. I mean, if you can wield it, screw it. You make it work, I don't care. You know, it's fun. It's a fun little weapon, for God's sakes. I mean, how many people have hit themselves with nunchucks, for God's sakes? So, you know, it's part of life. It's like, people make such a big deal of this, like, for God's sakes.
Good point.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to some Andor news. What do we got here, Laura?
Well, it sounds like Star Wars Andor has been nominated for a couple of Critics' Choice Awards, which is really exciting. I think, kind of one of the early award nomination announcements for 2023. I imagine we're going to get a lot more as more nominations come forward for Andor in particular, but it's been nominated for Best Drama Series and Best Lead Actor for Diego Luna. And they've got some stiff competition in both categories, but the fact that they got nominated at all, I think, is just very exciting, especially considering I think that there were just lower numbers for Andor in general. The fact that it's getting this recognition at all, I think, is just fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. You know, being a part of a critics organization myself with Hollywood Critics Association, we are about to announce our nominees. And so I very much voted for Andor and everything that it popped up in. So I'm a big fan of it, because obviously you can vote for multiple categories and multiple nominees, and then eventually they accumulate or they tabulate how many there are, and then that's who your overall nominees are at the end. So yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of it, and I'm not surprised, Laura. I think this was the goal. Gilroy wanted to create a Star Wars show that could compete with House of the Dragon, compete with Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, compete with these premier shows. And I think this is a good thing, whether the viewer numbers are down or up. Obviously, I care, because it could affect us getting a second season. There's going to be a second season. Never mind. I guess it could affect us getting this style of Star Wars again, is what I'm getting at. And I don't want that to go away. I don't want it to be the main thing of Star Wars, but I don't want that possibility to go away because of possible low viewership numbers. So the way to counter that is to get respect and critics awards or nominations for the show. And I think this is a good thing overall for Star Wars. Again, as I've said since the first time I started hosting shows about Star Wars way back in 2015, expanding the brand, expanding the franchise is how you stay alive. If people start to look at the possibility that the Star Wars franchise can create premier, critics-worthy of nomination type content, that's a good thing. That's another way of expanding the brand. Doesn't mean you walk away from all the other stuff that was the foundation of Star Wars, but it's a way of expanding it out into other areas for other people to get exposed to it. And those people can circle back and watch your other content. So it's smart in that way as well. So to me, this is great to be in the company of things like Bad Sisters, which I really loved. If you guys haven't seen it on Apple TV, you got to watch that. Better Call Saul, The Crown, which we reviewed on the Outlaw Nation channel. Euphoria, which I think I've aged out of. The Good Fight, same. House of the Dragon. And Severance, which I am finally going to watch tomorrow all day because I've never seen it. And Yellowstone, this is a good company to be in. And it's not a company that Star Wars has been in before. So I think this is good on so many levels. And to have Diego nominated, I think, is a great thing as well. To be with, I mean, people like Jeff Bridges, Sterling K. Brown, Odenkirk, Adam Scott, and Anthony Starr. And Anthony Starr being part of the boys, I think, is a great nomination for him as well. So this is good company that the show is keeping. And I think we're going to see more critics organizations nominating the show. Do I think there'll be any wins? I tend to think not, but I think it's a good, this is like The Dark Knight when it came out in 2008, but I was like, oh my God, this should be nominated for Best Picture. I think you're getting that vibe here from Andor. And again, I just think that's a good thing in the end, you know?
Exactly. When it comes to this prestige TV category, I mean, when you, I think of stuff like The Crown and House of the Dragon, mm-hmm. and I'm very excited to hear what you think about Severance. I loved that show so much. I've really? Rewatched okay. it a couple times. Very much looking forward to your thoughts. Wow. Yeah, it's a good one. I don't know, in terms of like Adam Scott being nominated for Best Lead Actor, I'm not sure if he's the one I'd be voting for that. I'm not sure who in this category I would really be pulling for other than Diego Luna, just so Diego Luna can have that win. I have a feeling Jeff Bridges is probably going to take it home. But
well, he's an old man, Jeff Bridges. So yeah, if you've watched the show at all, this is what he does the whole time. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. So maybe he shouldn't have. Maybe it should go to Bob Odenkirk then. If that's all Jeff Bridges is doing.
It's really good. It's great. I loved him in the show. But, you know, Kalinowski and I were doing imitations of him all through Comic-Con. So it's absolutely. I got to see that Star Wars panel. It's what he's doing the whole time. But it's great. He's so good at it. Of course, him coming back from being sick for 2 years with what he was dealing with. It was great to see him come back in that way. As an actor. But yeah, I think it's going to go to Odenkirk, but I think Diego Luna probably looks at this list of nominees and feels as an actor that there's a tremendous amount of pride to be taken to be included
for sure.
with these actors, you know?
Yeah. He should certainly be proud. For this series, I think to end up in the same category of nominations as something like House of the Dragon, I mean,
yeah.
I have a feeling that's probably going to take the win, but to be in that same sort of level, like that's everybody who worked on the show should be incredibly proud. That's a huge honor. And I imagine there's going to be many more of these, you know, these nominations coming in this upcoming award season.
Yeah. Hey, look, and I know it's fashionable now to criticize critics, organizations or awards or say they don't really represent the people and all that kind of stuff. I get it. But for artists and creatives, it's nice to be recognized by the people in your field, in your respective, by your respective peers as well. Trust me, it's a really important thing for people to feel that, to connect to that, to get that kind of validation from your peers. And there's nothing wrong with that. So if you can look at it from that point of view, I think that's an important thing to kind of put into your context when you're looking at these award shows and these awards and these nominations. You know, they're just, you know, it's successful people giving love to other successful people, but it's also a way to kind of have a feel like a connective part of a community and that your work is validated. And I think that's important for a lot of artists to feel that way, for God's sake. So, you know, they're not the most secure, level-headed bunch of artists. I hate to bring it. It's the truth.
They need this.
Exactly. The stroke matters. Anyway. All right. So yeah, that'll be happening January 15th. So also right around the corner as well, in a little bit under a month. So or over a month. All right, let's move on to our last section here, Laura. What do we got with, you got some Jonathan Kasdan stuff? What's going on here?
Yeah, he gave an interview to The Hollywood Reporter recently talking about some of his regrets, I guess, from working on Solo, and not just in the category of, you know, not getting to make a sequel, but some of the storytelling elements in Solo, A Star Wars Story that he ultimately wasn't really happy with and wanted, was hoping to be able to have another opportunity to resolve. And this was just so interesting to me. Yeah. It's just part of it was like, you wrote the story. Why didn't you go? But I guess, you know, you run out of time and that's fine. But it just is, it's just interesting to me that he's like, yeah, I have this regret about this one story component when I'm just like, you were the writer. Like you could have changed it, couldn't you?
Yeah. Let's read the quote real quick. He said this, I'll tell you the biggest problem that has always haunted me about Solo. I'm going to reveal the writer's nightmare right now. If Dryden Voss, which was Paul Bettany's character, is so concerned about exposing his gang in the Kessel heist, why does he send his most trusted aide, Kira, to be the most visible member of the team that steals the Coaxium? It seems to me that he's going to have to kill her almost immediately just to separate himself from the job. So it always drove me crazy, and it was a problem that I was eager to retcon in a sequel. So it's weird. And I think you're 100% right, Laura. Like, you wrote the show. How can you have a problem with a storyline that you effing wrote? So it's a valid thing to feel what you're saying. And also because, look, Willow's taking hits. People are not liking Willow overall. And Kasdan is involved in that. And so to me, I think Solo is a good movie. It's not a great movie. I don't think it's the fantastic piece of Star Wars. I think it's good. But there are issues with it. And Kasdan himself who wrote the thing is pointing out some of the issues, that to me is confusing. Why would I give you a sequel if you messed up the first one? Like, I just, to me, in my mind, I'm like, it doesn't make sense. We see Patty Jenkins running. I'm not going to too deep into that. We see Patty Jenkins essentially walking away from Wonder Woman 3 because they didn't like her treatment. She took the notes, made some changes. They still didn't like it. They moved away from him. So she had a terrible second movie in that Wonder Woman series. And so they're not going to go forward with her in a third one. At least she got the first one right. Here, Kasdan is in essence saying, I kind of made some mistakes here in the first one that I would have liked a sequel to correct. So it seems odd that in so many ways to approach it in this manner. And it doesn't make me want to give him or want to support him getting a chance to do a sequel to this film.
Exactly. It's, and the word retcon is really the most unusual, I think, of that entire quote. The fact that he would actually, that he would use that word in an actual interview with somebody and say, I want to retcon my own movie, is kind of mind-blowing to me, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, and you know, people have, there's obviously been the whole campaign of make Solo 2 happen, and that's a, there's, you know, it's a great idea, and I think that there's definitely places the story could go. I'm not like, I'm not banging any drums, like begging for a sequel to this movie, but I think it would be great, and I really like the Kira character. So if they're wanting to 100%. Do more with her, I'm fully on board with that. And Emilia Clarke herself, I think, has expressed interest in wanting to return to the character and see where else that they could take it. And I would not be opposed to seeing that.
Yeah. And I love her as an actress. And so whenever she gets a chance to be good in something, I want to support it. So Kira coming back, I'm 100% behind. Lando with Donald Glover coming back, I'm 100% behind. I'm a little less 100% behind Alden Ehrenreich coming back as Solo or Kasdan even coming back to do a sequel to the film. So, I mean, put this in Gilroy's hands and I'm 1,000% on board. Let's go make that. But not necessarily Kasdan. I, you know, and this is a weird, it feels like a weird, clumsy attempt to lobby for another Solo movie by admitting your mistakes on it. So it's weird. It's weird to keep the conversation in the ether because, like you said, there are a number of people who support this Solo 2 happening in the Star Wars fandom, but it's not certainly not loud enough yet for Star Wars to really legitimately look at it and start planning for a sequel. But I think this is Kasdan's way of kind of ham-handedly insinuating that he'd be down for it if they'd make it or if they were interested in making it. So we shall see. I mean, look, I never thought the prequel trilogy was going to come and become this revered thing. So you just never know in Star Wars 10 years down the road. And there are still people who think that Rian Johnson trilogy is happening at some point. So you just never know with Star Wars. You never know with a franchise. You never know with a brand what can happen. I mean, Iger coming back to Disney, no one legitimately saw that coming, for God's sake. So you just never know in life how you can come back to something. So we'll see. But yeah, odd comments for sure. You know, but I'm with Laura Kelly. Kira, bring her back in anything and everything. Bring Emilia back in anything and everything to play that character because she was the most interesting part of the whole movie for me personally. So, all right. Any final words about what's going on in Star Wars, Laura, before we wrap up the show? Any final things you want to say?
Okay. I think we're doing good. We're finally back with more High Republic content coming out. So I'm actually very happy with where things are at with Star Wars and very excited to sort of dig us out of the sort of dark heavy of Andor into just a lighter, more fun region of Star Wars storytelling. I'm a little bit more relieved. And hey, you know what? I'm on the record of saying I want dark adult Star Wars, and I'm somehow maybe not quite as much on that team anymore. So I'm looking forward to the future and what's to come, and very much looking forward to picking back up the story of Din Djarin and Grogu and the Mandalorian. So I think at least when it comes to Star Wars storytelling, I think in the first 6 months of the year or so, I think it's all good things to come. So I'm excited. Any final thoughts from you on this?
Yeah, if Laura and I were living in a big Star Wars house with a bunch of other Star Wars fans, she would open the door and it's like darkness and me just sitting there watching Andor with just one light on. Yeah, I'm going to leave you alone to that. So I hear you, Laura. I hear you. But to me, I'm excited as Andor has wrapped now, and you know, we talked about the critics nominations. I'm very excited to see what we're going to get in season 2 because it's going to be a hell of a task they're taking on, because the people who loved Andor like I did we are, the expectations are sky high now. And yeah. then the worry is sky high too, because you're making time jumps. And as we saw in House of the Dragon, time jumps can be jarring. And so can we make a connective tissue situation? And certainly we're not getting any of the directors back from the first season, which is something that Gilroy talked about. And he said, it's because all those directors have been snatched up by other projects, because there's not a lot of great TV directors out there who can direct the stuff that the premiere stuff that is out there for people to do. So he lamented that a little bit, but hopefully this new crop of directors comes in and we've got some nice, interesting, fun storylines combined with some of the actual grittier, darker elements of Star Wars as he becomes closer to the rebellion. I do think season two will be a lighter in places than season one was, because as we get closer to the rebellion, we're going to have that humor. We're going to have that sarcasm. We're going to have those little comments amidst all the madness of it all that I think is going to be important. And K2SO coming in, I think, is really going to lighten the show a lot. And that journey with them as they come together, I think, is going to lighten the show a lot, because he's a funny, sarcastic SOB. So there's going to be parts of that that I think are going to be involved in this overall. And I wonder if we get an Orson Krennic in season two. I wonder what we get in that way. I wonder, and we're certainly going to see Saul go deeper into his paranoia. So what's that going to lead to? And what are we going to get with Mon Mothma? What's going to happen to her child? What's going to happen to her husband? So I think there are going to be some darker elements, but I do think there's going to be more of the familiar, lighter stuff that we have seen in other projects be a part of season two for sure. Those are my final thoughts on that. So we shall see. All right. Well, anyway, let's wrap up the show. Thank you all so much for watching this episode of the Jedi Way. We went a little bit over an hour. We'd like to keep it under an hour. So we apologize if those extra minute or two bothered you a little bit, but thank you for staying with us on this train. And big, big thanks to Laura Kelly. Laura, please let people know where they can find you and everything you got going on, please.
Sure. If you can find me on Twitter, my handle is @shutup_Laura. It's the same on Instagram. And you can find the show that I host with my friend Alice called Force Toast, a Star Wars Happy Hour. That is @ForceToastPod on Twitter. And I'd like to, you know, hop around and do little guest spots every now and then, especially when somebody wants to invite me to talk about a book. And I recently joined Sal from the Rogue Rebels to talk about The High Republic Convergence, which is the first adult novel in the High Republic phase two. Nice. We both loved it, had a lot of fun reading it, and had a lot of fun talking about it. So that episode will be out very soon.
Nice. There you go. Please follow Lauren and everything she does, for God's sakes, ladies and gentlemen. This is a good follow in terms of that for Star Wars love, for sure. As for me, follow me @TheRokaSays on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, The Outlaw Nation on Twitch, which I'm not on Twitch that much anymore, but you can follow me there. I will eventually figure out how to get, maybe Jedi Survivor gets me back on Twitch. We shall see. But please remember to subscribe to the channel down below. We're so close to 25,000 subscribers. We're so close, so get us there. If you've enjoyed the content or you're discovering us for the first time, you like what we're talking about, please hit that subscribe button and that bell button as well. We got a lot of stuff dropping this weekend, so go and take a look at all of that. Spoke about the Wonder Woman stuff there. That video is still up. The hot mic is up now, so all that stuff is available for you all to sample here on the Outlaw Nation channel, and we appreciate it madly. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. And Laura, what do we have to tell them?
We tell them that until next time, remember, your focus determines your reality.